The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. How are you?
Zelensky is the new international hero of the moment. Obviously attracting a lot of news coverage, especially in light of this attempt to assassinate him, apparently by this Chechen gang that was set upon him by the Russian administration. It's interesting that the Russians have taken the approach of trying to neutralize the TV stations in Ukraine, the bombing of the communications tower in Kiev. This potentially has an impact on Zelensky's standing, because I think that he's been using the TV a lot to present himself not only to the Ukrainian public, but indeed to the world at large. And I just wonder to what extent the destruction of this communications tower will potentially reduce his exposure to the international community, or whether indeed the job has already been done, whether people see him again or not, whether he's already reached such a high level of recognition that no amount of lack of TV going forward will potentially damage that. I don't know. But unfortunately, in the process of damaging the communications tower, the Babi Yar memorial was also destroyed. Babi Yar, of course, that location in Ukraine, which was the site of a massacre during the Shoah period. More than 30,000 Jews were killed by the Nazis at Babi Yar, and not only Jews, even though the Jews were by far the largest group of people who were killed there, also the Roma and also many other people. All in all, something like 100,000 people were reported to have been massacred at Babi Yar, and there was this a memorial that had been set up to the victims of Babi Yar. And in fact, there was a ceremony only last year in the presence of President Zelensky and Israeli President Herzog, and also representatives from the US government, and I think the German Chancellor was also present, to memorialize 80 years since Babi Yar. Of course, that memorial now destroyed as part of the war. Very, very sad story indeed. And of course, it's just further evidence of exactly what's going on, not only in Kiev, but indeed around Ukraine, where the situation is concerning, to say the least. We understand that Kiev under a severe attack last night to today, with Russian forces lining up to take the city and people being killed. It just seems inconceivable that in our day and age, we are witnessing a war like this. Inconceivable.
It is absolutely inconceivable. The Babi Yar Holocaust memorial that was destroyed, is there a sense that this was intentional, it was a mistake? These missiles are normally pretty accurate.
My impression, and I don't know for sure, but the impression that I've gained is that it just happened to be right next to the communications tower that was the real target of this particular attack, and therefore I'm not sure that the Babi Yar memorial itself was a location. I would have thought that strategically it doesn't represent anything in particular, certainly wouldn't be very helpful to the Russian war effort, unless it was a message that the Russians particularly wanted to send. I think it's difficult for me to reach that conclusion. I think that this was just what they call in the business collateral damage. It just happened to be at the wrong place, right next to this communication tower, which was the real strategic target of the attack. So I don't know that I'd read too much into it, but who knows? There will be a lot written and said about this particular attack, and of course other events in this war as well. And of course, you know, Israel's involvement or lack of involvement also coming under very, very close scrutiny. Some interesting things that have happened just over the last day or so. First of all, the arrival of quite a large number of Israeli nationals who have been airlifted from countries around Ukraine, from Romania, from Moldova, from Poland in particular. Quite a number of people landed overnight coming back from the region with stories to make your hair stand on end about the way in which they were forced to escape. Interestingly, quite a number of students, Israelis studying in Ukraine, particularly in Kharkiv, medical students, engineering students, both Jewish and Arab, were reported to have run away at the first opportunity, struggled to cross the border into neighboring countries, and then managed to find an airlift to Israel. Reports that those people who are fleeing Ukraine have been particularly impressed by the Israeli consular services, the way that Israel has attempted to look after its citizens and to get them out of the war zone and to bring them home to Israel as quickly as possible. People with dual citizenship, many people, Ukrainian Israelis who have been backwards and forwards between Ukraine and Israel, potentially living in Ukraine right now and having to escape, to have come back to Israel. Also, interestingly, the Israeli government has come under quite a lot of criticism for not being willing to accept Ukrainian refugees. And there are reports that there are Ukrainian refugees who have tried to come to Israel and that the Israeli government has been somewhat reluctant to accept them. The Minister of Interior, Ayelet Shaked, announcing today that Israel will revise its rules about accepting Ukrainian refugees. I think the background to this particular story is the fact that there are as many as 180,000 Ukrainians who could potentially turn up in Israel and claim citizenship under the law of return right away. So those people cannot be turned away because the law protects their right to be here and to claim citizenship right away. That would be a challenge in and of itself without being concerned about those who are not entitled to claim citizenship under the law of return, but who under humanitarian circumstances, Israel would wish to try somehow to accept, although there is a concern that from an Israeli government point of view, that they don't want to allow those people to remain in Israel long term. So the conditions that the Ministry of Interior and Ayelet Shaked as the minister have announced today is that the people who claim refugee status and coming from Ukraine will be allowed to stay here as long as, and there's quite a list of conditions that apply, including the fact that they agree that they're not going to stay here long term, that they will eventually return back to another country, whether it's Ukraine or somewhere else. In some cases, I think they're even being asked to make a financial commitment, to make deposits, to prove that they have family members here, to try to justify reasons why they won't be a drain on Israel's economy and the Israeli social system while they're here, or attempt to claim long-term residency and even citizenship in Israel if they don't qualify under the law of return. So even those 180,000, and I'm assuming that they're not all going to turn up, but even if we get a small fraction, even if we get 20, 30, 40,000 people turning up within the next few weeks, that's going to be a significant challenge for the Israeli government to be able to house them, to be able to accommodate them. And of course, under the law, they are protected, and there's no possible way that the Israeli government could turn those people away.
It's just turned the world into complete turmoil, hasn't it?
It's turned the world into turmoil, and I think it's also asked very, very serious questions of the world leadership. Now, it's interesting that President Joe Biden, in his State of the Union address that he gave in the U.S. Last night, was very proud to say that Russian President Putin had no idea that the world was going to respond in this way. He thought that people were going to stand by and watch, and he had no idea that the world was going to be so determined in opposing him and in countering him standing against the work that he's doing in attacking Ukraine. Now, if you would ask the Ukrainians what they think, I think that they would say probably exactly the opposite thing. I think that they would say the world is standing by and watching and not doing enough in order to counter the particular attack that's going on from Russia right now. And so it's interesting how different sides of the equation are viewing the situation. I don't know what the listeners out there think. Do you think that President Joe Biden is justified to say that President Putin had no idea how firm the response would be? Or do you think it's true to say that the world's response is really quite weak, not firm enough, standing by and watching while people being killed, while Russians are invading a sovereign country? There is certainly a strong argument which says, unfortunately, the world's response has exactly come up to expectations in terms of what the Russian president thought they would do before he carried out this attack.
Laura says Biden is a joke. Paul asking the same question that we did answer yesterday, but it's probably worth answering again. If everybody asking about the Russian community's response in Israel to this crisis.
So just to go back to some of the things that I said yesterday, the Russian community in Israel is fairly mixed, which means that they are not purely Russian necessarily. There are, of course, some people who have no links, come from the former Soviet Union, who have no links to the Ukraine. But as a general rule, we find that the community who have made Aliyah from the former Soviet Union have fairly mixed links around that area. Many of them have family members in Ukraine, have lived in Ukraine, have come from Ukraine in the past and then moved to live in Russia or the other way around. The association is a relatively mixed association. And so therefore, in the most part, the Russian-speaking community in Israel are very much supportive of Ukraine, of what's going on in Ukraine. And even those people who don't have any family links or friends in Ukraine and who are purely Russian in every possible sense of the word also seem to somehow be supporting the Ukrainian endeavor and to be very much opposed to the aggression carried out by Russian President Putin. And it's my impression that even Russians, pure Russians, living around the world outside of Israel, people who are really most closely associated with Russia and not necessarily any links to Ukraine, even those people seem to be coming out very much in support of Ukraine and very much against Russian President Vladimir Putin. And that would even go further when you have a look at the protests that go on within Russia itself, people opposing the Russian president. And I just read an interesting piece on Sky News where one of the close advisors to the Kremlin, to Russian President Putin, has come out saying, this is a big mistake. The Russian president should never have carried out this particular attack. And now that he's in this situation, the best thing for him to do is to declare a ceasefire and to try and clear things up immediately. So the criticism of the Russian president coming from really, really close to Kremlin, to the advisors within the Kremlin, to the more moderate advisors. And the stories have suggested that President Putin is taking advice at the moment only from his more extreme advisors and seems to somehow have blocked out the advice that he's getting from more moderate people who have been very, very close to him and associated with giving him advice in the past.
A few comments from listeners. Daniel says, absolutely not strong enough. This is evidence that there's another Holocaust. It's very plausible and in this world. And Kim says, what actually constitutes a world war? Would the world go up against Putin? I think that they are doing nothing. It's exactly what happened in World War II. So that is interesting. Most of our listeners saying that, in fact, there doesn't seem to be enough of a response.
Well, you know, again, Israel has been very much compromised and in a huge dilemma in terms of its response. And one of the interesting stories that I've read is about Israeli arms that have been finding their way to Ukraine, not officially being given by the Israeli government. Instead, the Israeli government, I think, sent 100 tons of humanitarian aid to Ukraine, not armaments, but things that are considered to be relatively unobtrusive, relatively low key in terms of supporting Ukraine without necessarily getting under the skin of the Russians. So no arms as such. I mean, there are quite strong reports that Ukrainians have sent out an urgent call for Israel to provide it with an Iron Dome system, which I think would be an entirely plausible and logical thing to do when you see the extent of the explosions, attacks, the bombing attacks that are taking place within cities in Ukraine. I would have thought that Iron Dome would be an interesting defense mechanism in order to protect some of those cities. And as it turns out, it seems as if the Israeli government has no intention of providing an Iron Dome system to Ukraine for fear of treading on the toes of Russia. That would certainly be very antagonistic. But we do understand that Israeli arms have been finding their way to Ukraine via other governments. The report is that some arms of which are produced by the Rafael Israeli company in Germany have been sent by the German government to Ukraine. So Israeli armament somehow finding their way there. But as I say, the Israeli government being very, very cautious indeed still not to send anything to Ukraine to be seen to be supporting it militarily in a way that might cause Russia to somehow wish to view Israel as an enemy in this particular conflict. So very, very cautious at the moment. But I suspect that, you know, if this goes any further, if it goes beyond the borders of Ukraine, then it could potentially draw countries of Europe in to send more military aid, to send perhaps soldiers to be on the ground, which all foreign countries have up until now rejected the idea of doing. So I agree that countries are standing by. I agree that, you know, this does hark back to the days of the Shoah, when it was shouted that not enough was being done to take care of the German extermination program, the Nazi extermination program that was going on, and that the world, unfortunately, you know, hasn't learned much. One of the great quotes that I've come across in recent times is that we learn from history that we don't learn from history. And that seems to be what's happening right now.
Absolutely right. Anthony Reich, wise words. It is 8 o'clock. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning.